Welcome to the School of Batman, a podcast where we ask academics to help Batman fight crime using their research. I'm your host, Chris George, amateur scientist and professional Batman enthusiast. In today's episode, we'll be discussing Bane's snap decision. We're pleased to be joined by Mark Hannell.
Hi, everyone.
Mark has a PhD in stem cell mobilization from Imperial College London. Mark is currently the founder and CEO of Figshare, a repository for non-traditional research outputs, and the sponsor of this show. So thanks for joining us, Mark, and how are you today?
Doing very well, thank you. Happy to be here. I've been listening to all the podcasts so far.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for listening. So we'll talk a little bit about Figshare and your role in Figshare and what Figshare does in a little moment, but let's go back to the start and your journey into stem cell mobilization. Now, I'm sure most people have heard the words stem cell before. Maybe they understand a little about what they are and what they do, but certainly not stem cell mobilization. So talk us through your journey into stem cell mobilization and then give us a brief overview of what that means.
Yeah, sure thing. So I started off in the genetic space. I've always been really interested in the idea of manipulating the genome and what can be done. And at the time I was doing my undergraduate, it was really hot news. And the stem cell side of things is along those lines. It is, it kind of branched out of the genetic space. So when I did my undergraduate in genetics, my thesis was on Dolly the sheep and cloning, which is very related to stem cells. And then I did a master's in human genetics at the University of Leeds before coming down and focusing on stem cells. Again, my master's thesis was on doubling times in stem cells in the lab. And then I was able to use that to apply for a PhD, looking at using pharmacology to move the mesenchymal stem cells that exist in your body into other areas to aid regeneration and repair.
So how did you get from working in what sounds like a very traditional environment for how people think of scientists and researchers into founding your own company? And tell us a little bit about Figshare.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. A lot of researchers, when they're doing their day-to-day work, have a lot of time which they're spent waiting for cells to do certain things. Or if you think of it like a cooking experiment, there's often times when you've put something in the oven and wait for 2 hours. And so a lot of my experiments were very long days, you know, starting very early and staying very late. But I had a lot of time in between throughout the day, and I was playing around. I was a hacky coder at best. And again, a lot of researchers, they find lots of problems day to day that they feel can be fixed, or they'll come up with workarounds for it. And one of those things led to me starting Figshare, which was a lot of my research results were very visual. So there's a lot of videos of stem cells moving from one side of the screen to the other. And I was trying to mobilize these cells. And so if cells were moving very fast, we had a good novel candidate for mobilization. But if you've ever tried to describe videos in a text format, it gets very long and very dull and very confusing very quickly. So I really just wanted to publish the videos of these moving cells, and traditional publishing companies didn't really assist with that because they're very much from the text-based publishing space. And so I started making my videos available, my data sets available as well. And it just so happened to coincide with funders suggesting that technology can really help different academics build on top of the work that's gone before. So I was making my videos available purely for, you know, ego and vanity reasons. And I'd spent my weekend working on these videos and I really wanted to get credit for them. And academia is a very competitive space. I wanted to turn up for my postdoc interviews and say, I've had all this impact, because I really did want to stay in stem cells. It's a very fast moving, buzzwordy type of area. And in the years since I've left, it's come along leaps and bounds, and other advances in things like CRISPR have come along. And I started making all these files available. The funders were saying, we're going to start requiring that all academics work in this way, move academia into the 21st century. So a lot of funders, the European Commission, the NIH, the NSF, they've said, if we fund your research, you need to make everything available. So it was just a handy coincidence that at the time they started saying this, I built a system that allowed a lot of people to make all of these non-traditional research outputs available. So now we work with lots of funders, lots of universities, to enable them to do this and to enable them to get credit for all of their research that's coming out of the university.
So let's move on to your story. Now, before we do our stories, we like to ask our guests to choose a Batman actor to represent their Batman, someone they want to show as their Batman and everything embodying Batman that they can think of. So, Mark, have you chosen somebody?
Yeah, it was suggested to me that I could think outside of the box here and think about people who haven't yet been Batman, but in my opinion are likely to become the next Batman. And I decided to go with everyone's hero, Wayne Rooney.
Wayne Rooney, okay. It's certainly a left field choice, but maybe you can talk us through some of the rationale behind thinking of Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, he's a big guy, so he looks like he could take a few punches in a fight, but also he is deceptively athletic, having been a professional footballer for the last decade. And he's still relatively young, but he's got an older looking face, so he can suggest that he needs respect at the same time. And I think it's always good to have a Brit branching out into new things.
Wonderful. I think, yeah, certainly with those confluence of different factors, I think he'd make a great Batman and a great Bruce Wayne. So thanks for that, Mark. After many nights of grueling work tracking down the criminals that Bane has turned loose on the streets, the Batman is exhausted. Bane decides to confront him for the first time on the roof of the Gotham City Bank, and a vicious fight ensues. Bruce holds his own for the first few minutes, but Bane is focused where Bruce is scattered, and launching into a wrestling move befitting of his mask, breaks both of Bruce's arms. Bane flees as an Alfred-piloted Batwing arrives at the scene, desperately hoping a brand new serum developed can help speed Master Bruce back to recovery. So Mark, in this situation, this brand new serum has been developed by you and your team. So how could your research help Batman recover from these fractured and broken arms?
Yeah, so the interesting thing about stem cells is you have different types. You have embryonic stem cells that can turn into any cell. That's the really special thing about stem cells, is that they can turn into any cell. But you also have, obviously, embryonic stem cells, there's some ethical debate surrounding them. But you also have mesenchymal stem cells, which is what I worked on. And mesenchymal stem cells are found in lots of tissues naturally existing today. So inside each of you, you have a lot of mesenchymal stem cells. The biggest pool of them is the bone marrow. And while they're really good for some things, they can't turn into every cell. What they can turn into, however, is bone cells, cartilage cells, or fat, whereby fat might not be too useful for our Batman. The other two would be very useful if you've just broken your arms. So one other interesting thing about stem cells is if they are mobilized into the blood, then they naturally home to the sites of cell damage or the signals that are produced when there's some kind of trauma. So it's very interesting for applications if you have a heart attack. One of the things that you need to do is regenerate the heart tissue as fast as possible. So two things that are critical here are mobilizing stem cells and doing it in a timely manner. So in this particular case, it's very nice that Alfred has turned up on his Batwing, because although we will be getting stem cells released from the bone marrow into the blood, if we could ramp up that reaction and get more of the stem cells to be released into the blood, then they'll naturally home to the site of injury, the breaks and the fractures. And if you can get more stem cells to the site of injury, you can effectively speed up the recovery. It's not going to be instantaneous, but what you can see, hypothetically, is this idea that the broken arms will be healed much faster if you can get more stem cells into the blood at as soon a point as possible.
Okay, so you said something really interesting there that certainly caught my ear. And we need to dig into some of the fundamentals of the topics you were talking about. But you were saying, it sounded like you were saying, and please do confirm, that this serum is not a syringe full of stem cells. It's something that promotes the release of more stem cells within Batman. Was that right?
That's right. So what you could do, which is another good thing for Alfred to have on hand just in case, you could have a bone marrow removal. So you hear a lot about bone marrow transplants where they deplete the bone marrow and then replace it with new bone marrow. But in order to do that, you need some bone marrow. So it's a very common procedure. You can pull out some bone marrow and then you can grow it up in the lab. So I can take out some bone marrow, separate out the mesenchymal stem cells, and then culture them in order to grow them up. There's a few things that aren't particularly useful about that. One of the things that my research was finding that the more doublings of those stem cells you have in a tissue fast, the more likely it is that the receptor levels on those cells, which help them move, are diminished. So there's a school of thought that says if you grow stem cells up in the lab and then inject them back in, it's great. There's more of them, and by just sheer volume, you're going to get some of them going to the site of injury. But instead, if you can mobilize the ones that are in the bone marrow already, then these cells are much better at traveling through the body to the site of injury. Luckily, the skeleton is quite good and it's pretty consistently available throughout the body. If you'd have broken a leg or a finger, you'd have the same ability to respond. So there's this idea that if you mobilize the stem cells from the bone marrow themselves, you get more chance that you're going to get more cells arriving at the site of injury. And that's what we were looking at during my research. And the results were, early results, but seemed to be indicative that this was true.
Okay, so I guess my first question is, if we're about promoting the release of more stem cells that exist within Batman through this serum, I know you said there's two options, but for this we're going to focus on the promoting the release of pre-existing stem cells. Why are they not all released at once if an injury occurs within a body? Is there like a critical mass? Like, say, if there's 100% of available stem cells, a particular injury at any one time can only accept 20%. I mean, do these questions even make sense?
Yeah, that question makes sense, but it's still stem cells is a relatively new field in terms of, the life sciences, and we're seeing massive advances happening all the time. So there's a really interesting field which is induced pluripotent stem cells, which is taking your own, say, skin cells and turning them into stem cells. So it's moved along super, super fast. But there's still a lot of the basic questions that haven't been answered. So why doesn't your bone marrow just whack out every stem cell that it has? Is a really good question. And it's actually a really good question when you look at things like aging, because at one time it was thought that you have a finite number of stem cells and you are releasing them over time. And obviously you get more of them in your bone marrow, they replicate in the bone marrow. But why is it that when you're 85, if you cut yourself, are the stem cells not helping you repair that at a fast rate like they are when you cut yourself when you're 15? And originally it was thought that the number of stem cells in the bone marrow was going down over time. But now it's suggested that the actual consistency of the blood is not conducive with mobilization of stem cells. So it's not known why this is. You can look at, evolutionary aspects or things like this, but we still don't know why that is. And so, similar to your question, why doesn't it just whack out all of your available stem cells? There's probably some good reasons health-wise why you don't want to have completely depleted stem cell stocks, because you need a few. But there's definitely a lot more in the bone marrow compared to what is released when there is even a quite significant injury like fractured arms.
Right, so it could just be some kind of historical evolutionary hangover where these kind of injuries might have happened a lot more often, and the body is thinking, well, I might need some tomorrow for when the dinosaur chases me and I break my other leg.
Exactly. I like the idea that the body is thinking.
Well, Of course, but yeah, so but that kind of idea, like we have these kind of hangovers from, we haven't been evolving very long is all I'm trying to say.
So that's actually really interesting in terms of the research that I was doing, is can we trick the body and can we, it's basically just pathways research. So it's understanding if you do this, what is the effects of doing this? And in other parallel fields to stem cell biology, you had things like gene therapy, where if you, again, tying up genetics and stem cells, if you query something genetically or change something genetically to try and knock out markers for a disease or what have you, what actually happens? And one of the problems there is we don't understand all of the pathways. So if you do this, yes, it might fix this little problem, but it also might cause 10 more problems. And so that was a concern with my research, but realistically, we were just trying to say, if we change the pathways, can we affect this one or two physiological responses to blocking this receptor or trying to enhance the amount of a certain chemical at the site of injury? That's another thing that the serum could do. It could help mobilize these cells, but you could also inject it locally to obviously ramp up the response locally as well.
Great. So explain a little bit more about some of the fundamentals around stem cells. Are they like kind of like the simplest cells, or do they contain all the information of all the cells they could be, or is there another factor that acts upon them to give them the information to be a bone cell or a fat cell or something like that? And what keeps them latent in their environment? So when they're in the bone marrow and they are staying as stem cells, what keeps them latent? Like, how does the switch occur?
So stem cells, it's a very simple idea, which has a lot of applications, which is why you've heard so much hype about them. And it can be summed up as that they can turn into any cell. So at one point, you yourself were just a tiny little ball of stem cells called a blastocyst. And this is very, very early in the life cycle. And so those cells are all embryonic stem cells. Embryonic stem cells can turn into any cell type. So they replicate, but they also can, we call it differentiate, which means turn into. So if you think about it, those cells have turned into anything from neurons, nerve cells, or skin cells, or muscle cells, or bone cells. So they all came from a single origin. And so the idea is that if you can get these cells to a site where they're needed, and then get them to turn into the cells that you want them to turn into, then that can really help. And we've seen things like some of the early successes in stem cells, macular degeneration, so cells at the back of the eye dying, and it means that people go blind over time. So they know it's happening and there's not much you can do about it. Until the first successes with stem cells, where you had people injecting cells that could turn into eye cells, macular cells, into the back of the eye, which sounds pretty gruesome, but I'm sure you'd do it if you could not go blind. And it actually found that the natural environment would turn those cells into eyes. So it's a very simple idea again there, that just because of where a stem cell is put, the local niche and the local kind of biological soup will force it to turn into a certain cell. So that's two very simple ideas that have super far-reaching implications.
This is really purely speculation, but is there anything with regards to how maybe how cross-species stem cells can work? Is that a good avenue for potential new source of stem cells, or they're helping out without needing to do bone marrow or things like that?
Speculation and stem cells go very hand in hand together, and obviously there's a lot of different use cases and a lot of problems that we have in treating people that you can look to regenerating tissues. It's called regenerative medicine for a reason, you know, and they've got to the point where they can grow little livers in a lab, which is good, but you kind of just need one big liver. So an obvious place to look is at different animals, and we already have xenotransplantation of organs from other animals and whether organs from other animals can survive in the human body. But that's kind of less related to stem cells at this moment. We also have stem cells that can be created using, you know, in a world where people are generating new life forms based on a genetic sequence, then if you can control that genetic sequence and implant it into stem cells, you can have that replication that is naturally occurring in stem cells. But it's still very early days when it comes to trying to advance the space and advance the ethics of the space. And I think that's why my research at the time was in a very nice place, because it's all in your own body. You're not really running into as many of the ethical problems that a lot of stem cell biology treatments have. So if you can just keep everything, it's your own stem cells moving to do the repair themselves, then it removes a lot of the barriers. In North America, for example, embryonic stem cell research, which is potentially solving a lot more problems because it can turn into a lot more cells that we know of, it's banned. So you can't do research into embryonic stem cells, or the embryonic stem cell lines that they have, that's what we call the cultures, are very old, kind of grandfathered in. So if you're thinking about these embryonic stem cells replicating and replicating and replicating, but maybe becoming less functionally good over time, then it's very difficult to apply a consistent therapy if some of the cells have replicated lots of times, some of the cells replicated a few times. The experimental error gets really large there. And so if you can just keep it within the body itself, then it's a lot easier.
So these things about the different aspects of research we've been talking about, have any of those influenced, or do any of those follow through into Figshare and your work that you do today?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and it really does. I was just mentioning about a lot of the work that's going on in labs. There's billions and billions being pumped into this research area, and you can have 2 labs, you can have 10 labs around the world doing the exact same experiments because they don't know about these experiments going on. And there's a lot of wastage at that level. You can imagine if myself and you, Chris, were doing the same experiments, you're in Tokyo, I'm in Boston, and we both find out that the experiment doesn't work. It's clinically sound, but it doesn't give us the results that we want, some novel findings. You know, this drug doesn't mobilize cells. We could have spent £20,000 generating that drug. And so making all of your research openly available really helps build on top of the research that's gone before. So we would know, oh, Chris has tried this and it didn't work. Well, it worked, but it's not a candidate drug, and we shouldn't spend any more time investigating it. I think reproducible research and building on top of the research that's gone beforehand is something that a problem that Figshare is trying to solve, and working with lots of different universities to do that. And I think even going back 5-10 years, the research that I was doing would have been sped up if I'd have been able to find out about every experiment that had been done and all of the research outputs, the data sets, those videos, even to give me a clue, to give me all of the information so I can make a really informed decision on what experiments to be doing in order to go further faster with my research.
So great, using your research, we can get those stem cells, get more of them into the body, get them mobilizing more efficiently, and get Batman, his arms, healing, getting back out onto the streets of Gotham, fighting crime. Thanks very much to Mark Hannell for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to find out more about Mark's work, you can find him on Twitter. Link will be in the description. And you can also find his thesis and data on figshare.com. If you'd like to be a future guest on the podcast, please email us at info@figshare.com. And you can find us on Twitter at School of Batman.